And we're back. Deep thinking.
That hurt. That actually
deep
hurt.
Deep thinking.
Deep thinking. Number what? 35.
There you go. We're playing with you folks, and we're trying to change roles here, and we're confused ourselves.
Oh.
So I'm Ed Sorbo, and you can find me at le-suspension.com. That's the Lindemann Engineering website. And he's Michael Gugis, and you can find his photos at SmugMug something.
Motorbikeroadracing.smugmug.com. I mean, letting Ed introduce this, I think I pulled something. It hurt that bad. Oh, my God. Did we say episode 35 already?
We did, but now we said it again. It never hurts.
Episode 35. Ed, I'm a genius.
You are a genius. And probably your most genius thing is coming up for the titles for the show and the little intro.
Right.
Thingamajig.
But I just wanted to point out, I think that my writing for the intro and the description of the show is some of the best writing I'm doing nowadays. Why am I a genius? Right. Do you remember when I...
So the strength of your memory, it's like a rusty steel
trap?
No.
The genius is that I can't remember anything. So that means everything I come up with is brand new and equally genius.
There you go.
It's all
fresh anyway.
Yeah, right? At least to me, like a goldfish. They say that a goldfish has like a 30-second memory span. So like every 30 seconds, a goldfish is going, ooh, look, a castle.
You know, people get down on goldfish for not being very smart.
But if you put them in your ear...
You can understand every language in the
universe. That's a babble fish.
Where do you think they got babble fish from?
I don't know.
They were goldfish that were modified genetically.
What a horrible thing to do.
Put a babble fish in your ear?
So you could actually hear everybody and everything they say?
Do you have your towel?
Oh, I know exactly. Oh, dude. Okay.
Why are you a genius?
What do you call those little things? Loud, noisy kids. I don't have any kids, but it's niece. My niece.
Okay.
Man, she... She grabbed my sister's phone the other day, called an Uber by punching buttons on my sister's phone, and opened the garage door and was heading down the driveway towards the Uber carrying her towel. She's 18 months old. That was awesome. No, I'm a genius because a few months ago I pointed out, hey, people, you guys want to spice up a weekend at a MotoGP race or a superbike race or whatever, drop qualifying. Do some heat races. I thought that was a great idea. There's a couple of sports car events or sports car series. Main race on Sunday, sprint race on Saturday. Formula One is actually talking about this now. One of the things that Formula One car racing is talking about, sprint race Saturday afternoon. More opportunities, mix the grid, invert the grid, do whatever kind of crazy shit you want. More opportunities for people to get on a podium, more opportunities for people to get top tens.
I actually preferred that when we qualified with heat races in the AMA, and when
I was
racing,
did this, right?
when we switched to time qualifying, you know, you got more time, and you know, that was nice. And in those situations, it's the way they made the change. You got to deal with it.
Right.
So you might as well find a positive and be happy.
Right.
But yeah, I'm good with either. I like more racing. I like heat racing. The problem with heat races, it's an organizational thing, right? You can have problems. You can have a red flag and all this stuff.
Right.
If you have time qualifying, there's a 20-minute session, it's more likely that you get your qualifying without messing with the rest of the schedule.
Granted.
And so then the reason that they would be coming back to heat races is just that promoters want to mix things up and do stuff different and all that. And that's fine.
And it's good. And it's good for the spectators. It's more racing.
Well, I think both things. Super Bowl is fucking cool.
Oh,
right?
Granted,
you know,
granted.
And the MotoGP thing with the guys going in and out of pits and all that. There's a positive to all of those things.
Right.
Dude, if you told me you're going to do this new racing series and at half the races you're going to have heat races and half the races you're going to have...
Awesome.
I'd be like, that's fine. As long as I know in advance what we're going to do.
Exactly.
And, you know, exactly. I'm more worried. I want to know more. The thing that matters more to me is when I'm planning for the season. The season hasn't even started yet.
Right.
If you could give me the schedule of the events of each race.
You mean schedule each day?
The daily schedule, when I'm going to be on the track, and I know in advance...
Right.
And I can get my head around that and have my plan. And this means each morning I got to do this. And that, to know that, I would rather have that more than one kind of qualifying or another.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why so?
I want to make a plan. I want to know what I'm going to do. I don't want to have to wait till 3 days before the race weekend for the schedule to come out to know when my fucking race is.
Okay.
Right? A club racer has a pretty good idea what his schedule is going to be all season long. The club does whatever they do, they always do it the same.
Okay, got it.
If you go pro racing, it would seem to me that I should be able to know, is my race in the afternoon or is it in the morning?
Morning.
And mostly you don't know for sure.
When are my practice sessions? When can I go get my tires changed? All of that stuff.
You know, the premier class probably knows for sure, but all the rest of us, that when I was in the AMA, I would see the order of practice would be different frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at a Moto America schedule from a couple events ago, and the order of the practice in the morning before the race is different than the order of the races. It seems to me that whoever's racing first should practice first so they have the most time if there's a problem
to get ready. Right.
If you practice last and race first...
And there's a problem in your last practice session, you know, you're hosed.
And I don't know why in America we've had that way of having things done. And we talked about this before. Why can't you tell me the schedule? Let's say I'm trying to decide, do I really want to do the KTM class?
Okay.
Well, if every single event, the KTM class is going to be the filler between two premier events, and I know the crowd's still going to be there, it has more value.
Right.
If it's not going to be till the end of the day after every weekend, and we're treated like third-rate citizens, and we only practice at 6 a.m., and we race at 6 p.m., well, maybe I don't want to do it. Now, maybe you don't want to tell me that schedule, because then you won't. You know I won't come. That's bullshit. You need to fix your schedule.
Right. I think.
But we've gotten off track again. We had some cool
what a
stuff.
Surprise.
We wanted to talk about what we hinted at the previous show.
Is it the hinting about me not getting an Aprilia yet? Come on, people, step up.
I'm impressed. You got Hickory Farms after like 30 weeks of begging. And from Hickory Farms, you don't go to
an RSV4.
You just go all the way to a motorcycle, you know?
And I've got momentum. I've got momentum going.
Oh,
I've got
carry
people.
It. Okay.
I'm going to carry the momentum.
I think the hill's a little steep, and you may end up rolling back. So we hinted that we were going to try to, dig into what is going on. Is it a relative
Suzuki
speed of the front Yamahas and Hondas,
right,
and then compared to the Ducatis and the Suzukis? Those guys started really strong, and now it's not as good. So the most obvious thing is, the factory guys are getting better, and the other guys are staying the same. But I don't think that the Yamaha is that much better than it was the first race. You know what I'm saying?
I can see that.
What I'm saying is the Yamaha started at a really high level.
Right.
And so it's hard to go more.
Right. And then the Honda got
lost their way a little bit. And now we saw what happened, right?
Right. We're sorting that
You know
shit
what,
out.
Though? Huh. Pedroza is still on the 15 chassis, isn't he?
That's all I was wondering.
I'm pretty sure. I'm not 100% positive, but he was on the 2015 chassis before.
Right.
And they didn't say that he changed, and if he had, they would have made a big thing about it.
Because he's comfortable on the 15 chassis.
Well, and that's a perfect example.
Fine.
Right?
It's so fine.
Like when we're thinking they changed the chassis, most of us are thinking there's some pretty big change, right?
We're taking one internal rib out of the spars,
it's some really small, I bet you if you put the two frames side by side on the ground, are the same, aren't they?
Exactly, No, you idiot.
So, they really good results out of two different chassis.
Mm-hmm.
So massive. So,
you know what trips me out? We talk about Honda tracks and Yamaha tracks.
Yep.
And how in the world is it that the bike that just, like we looked at the Sachsenring, the Honda was dominant. What changes? I mean, we're talking so fine a difference that a difference in the length of a straight.
I wonder if it has partially to do with you believe it's a Honda track or a Yamaha track. And it's not just you, right?
Right.
It's you, the rider, times everybody on the team.
Right.
And they work that little bit better because it's a Honda track.
And the other team thinks, we're here racing for third today.
Oh, fuck, dude, we're only a little ways behind him is okay.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That kind of psychological thing is huge.
Yeah.
And it's been proven in scientific studies. There's a great one where they were doing eye tests on people. And so to see about that difference, do you see better because you believe you see better?
Right.
They brought in the test people into a flight simulator. It was an F-111 flight simulator.
Okay.
And they treated them like pilots. So they had them in a flight suit, and they briefed them like a pilot, like the whole thingy. And then they go get into flight and they're flying the plane, and the F-111 is a low altitude penetration bomber.
Right.
So it flies nape of the earth. It's really exciting, and it's a real simulator, right, that moves a whole bit.
Cool.
And then at some point in this simulation, and you're being treated like a pilot, mm-hmm. the computer puts a standard old eye chart on the screen for you, and they ask you to read line 4 or whatever. Okay? Now, the people have also already been, you know, taking this test in the normal situation. Like, you walk into the test in your street clothes, okay, fill out this form, take this eye test, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now the test is going to begin, and they start to put you in the flight suit. So really? These guys are all jazzed. They're like, I'm a pilot! And then they take the test, and they all get, they do way better than their base one. The control group, they come in, they take the eye test, they fill out the same paperwork, whatever.
Right.
And then they get, they just go to the simulator. They're in their street clothes, they don't get treated like pilots, they don't get the jazzed mm-hmm. up. And they're told, hey, the flight simulator's broken, just sit in there and read the eye chart for us.
Right.
And they all did not improve. All of them, right? So the idea that you're really a pilot and the pilots have good eyesight made you see better. And so...
there is,
it could be.
There is something in we study in public speaking called facilitative anxiety, and facilitative communication anxiety. And what it means is that you're going to be nervous. You use that nervousness, to your advantage.
Yeah.
When you're nervous, it's your body flooding with, you know, adrenaline and,
useful
and energy.
Stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. Adrenaline's great, man. Yeah. You know, and you look at that and go, hell yeah, it's on. Let's right. rock, you know?
Yeah, versus the other person who just thinks about how scared they are and it turns into a negative and they can't even talk anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I can't remember who it was. I was telling him in the middle of one of my runs of really good results at Willow on the SV. It was like, couldn't wait for final call. I'm just pumped.
Yep.
I'm sweaty. Actually, if you took my sweat, it would actually be pure Red Bull. It's so many energy drinks.
Okay,
in.
So we got Honda and Yamaha have great bikes.
Yes.
And they've both maybe moved their game. Honda moved their game up more than Yamaha did.
So it looks really close now.
But still, right? I think the biggest tell is you pointed out how happy the Ducati guys were at the first round.
Yes.
They don't look happy
anymore. No, not at all.
So I think that proves that something went wrong with the Ducati's development.
Now, I'm not sure if it's the development. I'm not sure. Have they brought a new chassis?
Not that they've talked about on MotoGP.
Right?
Now, if you're smart, you don't have to go tell the journalists that you have a new chassis. And we just talked about how you couldn't tell apart by just looking at them.
Right, right, right.
Something is different. And I don't think it's just that those guys went faster, because if your bike all turns now, I think you stay happy all year.
Exactly.
You don't suddenly become moping because, you know, you finished a position low.
Now, is the...
And they didn't drop just a position.
No.
Right? The B Ducatis are coming up and threatening
and
them.
And the factory guys are throwing it away.
Yeah, they're crashing.
Exactly.
Suzuki's crashing too.
Just like the Ducatis did last year. Now... how big a difference has this new, I know Bridgestone changed a tire?
Well, no, they changed it, they brought a harder tire to the last round.
Okay.
That was just for Assen.
And
that's a tire that Lorenzo didn't like.
Okay, but that's
so
the front.
No, that was a rear.
Okay.
So here is the normal thing. The only difference is they brought 4 fronts because that heat wave came
through.
And they wanted to cover all their bases. And it's a good thing they did, because the Hondas used the other tire they brought, which was the hard front.
There's something going on there. And it's just, like I said, it's the same thing that was happening last year.
So part of it, I think, is the depth of knowledge and experience that Honda and Yamaha have and Ducati and Suzuki don't have. That depth is the kind of thing where, you know, I'm going to Miller in 2 weeks with a bunch of friends. So I sent them an email telling them how to make sure there's no air in your cooling system, then there's no air in the hose that leads to your overfill bottle, so that when it pushes water out and sucks it back in, it's all working perfectly. Why? Because I know the altitude's higher there, and the temperature issues are greater there.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully all the guys in my group, we're going to come there, we're not going to have that problem.
Right.
Once your bike overheats, it's like kind of hard to get it really fixed all the way that day.
Right.
You're never going to get the bike all the way totally cold, right? You're just behind the curve and you waste the time and whatever. So there's some of that because Honda and Yamaha have been doing it at this level for so long and Ducati and Suzuki haven't. But I think there's still something else and I can't put my finger on it, and I think it's proven in how unhappy the riders look. Right? They still got the soft tire, and yet they're not... The Suzuki qualified on pole, for crying out loud.
Right.
Right? What happened?
I think... Okay, here's what I think happened. And we're talking about psychology, okay? Here's what I think happened. After winter testing, Ducati was like, we are going to win a race this year. We are going to win a race this year.
And they didn't win in four races, and they just folded?
And not that they're folding, but they can see that goal slipping away. Yeah. So close,
And you're right. If you multiply that feeling by all the people in the crews and all the people in the back at the shop and whatever, that could be.
You know,
these guys are all pros. I mean, we go like, oh, Honda and Yamaha have more experience. Okay, right. But everybody who works in that whole paddock, they each have a lifetime of experience, right?
Yeah, so, but there's a lifetime plus
one. When I go to a race, one of the things I know is to not let myself go down those negative thinking paths.
I know that.
Right?
And I know that.
These guys know that.
But we're human beings. We can't help it. You know, dude.
I can totally turn off my human beingness for 10 minutes when I have to.
But you can't do it for a whole race. And you have been, you know what it feels like to come out of that last corner on lap one, right on somebody's tail section, watch them pull away down the straight and realize they're going to do that every lap to you. Now you make a plan. Maybe you get in front of them. Maybe you block them. Maybe you kick them. You know, whatever
you know,
it is,
but
right?
They overcame that in the early part of the season.
No, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
No, they
didn't give up. They kept fighting.
I think they might have been coasting on their...
Oh, you know what?
Winter.
We should look at the actual results at the end of the race.
What do you mean?
Well, so they qualified really well, and they fought in the race and all that stuff. But where did they actually... We remember that part.
Once they
drop out of the picture, right?
It was podiums for the first four races.
Yeah, right. The Ducati was...
The podiums for the first four races, and then it's just been a slow progression back through the field.
That's right.
And that's the thing that's just... Oh, that just eats at your stomach lining, dude. That's why Dovey doesn't look happy. He was absolutely sure he was going to win a race this year. And now I'll bet if you ask, especially after he, you know, wound up in the gravel trap this time, I'd be willing to bet if you asked him, he's absolutely sure he's not going to. That Honda and Yamaha have asserted their dominance, which is, and you know, and I will say it again, Yamaha did not need concessions. They did not need special tires.
Yeah.
They didn't need any extra testing. They just went, what do we have to do to beat Honda? And God bless them. They just dug in and did it.
Hey,
you know?
Did we talk about... No, we didn't talk about Redding.
Not yet.
Redding and the team started to make progress in practice and qualifying. You know, he almost made it into Q2. It was looking good. He was the first guy to go on the medium tire.
Right.
And then he was the first guy to use the hard tire. And I was thinking, oh, maybe they found the feel thing that... Because... He's a good rider, and he has the problem that Ducati and Yamaha, they lack something,
right?
Whatever it is. And so it can be that kind of thing, that the tire is, right? When they're talking about harder and medium and all, it's not just the rubber compound.
Yeah.
It's the construction. Right? Everything about
right,
it.
Right.
And so if that front is pushing up with more force and giving him a firmer feel,
right?
More of a Dunlop feel and less of a Pirelli feel for our listeners, right? And it makes him happy.
Is that
then,
stereotyping? Are we profiling?
But everybody gets it, right?
Okay.
And then it didn't work out in qualifying. He ended up in the Q1. And then he threw it away on the last corner of the first lap.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying too hard.
Rookie!
It was a bummer. Hopefully they can... Whatever they learn, they can apply it at the next race.
Redding's on
forward.
A factory bike. Is he
is.
On the 2014 or 15 chassis?
Oh, I'm assuming he's on the 2015.
That would
they only
yeah, and that's the one that Marquez struggled a little bit with.
Yeah,
you know, hey, maybe that's Redding's claim to fame. Look, me and Marquez couldn't get this chassis to work.
Well, that's another example of the difference between the factory team and the satellite team. Like people are like, oh, it's the same bike. Well, yeah, except this guy has the ability to go, listen, go get me the
go get me,
out of
exactly.
That,
go
right?
get,
and
go
this
take
guy
that one out of the museum.
Can't. Yeah, right?
Right, you know?
So, oh, yeah, because, you know,
so
it's not
funny.
Like they keep those frames on a shelf, right? They cut them up and they recycle them. They don't want people getting a hold of that frame
because and learning why.
Something.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's the knowledge. Yeah, it's the knowledge. And for all the people who keep wanting to tinker with the rules to make the racing better, here's the thing you can't fix. You can't equalize, and it's the knowledge in the paddock. It's the knowledge in your garage, you know?
Well, you're right. So there's, we talked about this before, there's the purist argument. Mm-hmm. Don't have any rules, just let them all go.
Right.
Yeah, I get it. Great, right? Except what's going to happen is you're going to have only one team. The other guys aren't going to compete. They can't. They know that if they have to go up against the guys that have, it'd be like you and me having a foot race with the same Bolt.
Okay.
Right? Like, oh, why are we even doing this, dude? Because he's going to
win. Why are we even doing this, right?
What do I got to do? I got to get Michael to tie a rope to Hussein's ankle and yank on it, you know, three times. Right? Make him fall over three times for me to win the race.
If he
only
falls twice, he's still gonna
beat me. Right? And so then, okay, listen, we're trying to put on a show and we gotta have more teams in it. And it's better for if you're the dominant guy.
Right.
Right? You need people to beat.
You need.
Otherwise, you're just riding around in a circle by yourself. It's
Honda
pointless.
And Yamaha want Ducati in the mix so they can beat Ducati.
What is the thing that all great competitors had to have?
A rival.
A foil. Exactly,
rival.
Just like a comedian team.
Exactly.
And if you don't have somebody to beat to make you look great, what do all great presidents have, all great leaders? A fucking war, a disaster, something to fix.
Some kind of crisis.
If you just do your job perfect and you solve everything before everything becomes it, everybody thinks you're mediocre.
Exactly.
Right?
Doesn't that suck?
It does totally suck. It's like being the smooth rider.
Right
in front, and everybody's watching the Kevin Schwantz guy in back. He's 2 seconds behind you, but he's all exciting. I hate that.
What was I going to say? You can't equalize that. You can, on the other hand, though. You need to let people, and this is another argument, you need to let people develop mid-season. You have to allow it because
that's what they allow. That's one of the concessions they give to those guys, is they can change their tires.
And I'm totally cool with that. You need not just tires. You can test.
I meant to say engines.
Test engines. You got it. You got to allow that. You got to allow people.
So I think what we're trying to say to Ducati and Suzuki and everybody else is keep trying, guys.
Get off your asses.
It's worth it to be there. People will make derogatory statements like, check it out, the two Suzukis finished 10th and 11th. They're battling for last place.
Much like we did during the last podcast.
You did. It's better, I think it's better to be in the show, in the fight, showing that, and because Suzuki's learning stuff.
Yeah.
And they're applying that knowledge to the GSXR line.
Yeah.
And they're making that bike better, and it's a great bike. Right? It's not bad to go racing. You don't have to win all of the time.
No.
And when you fail, you probably learn more.
You just need to look competitive. You need to look competitive.
Well, they look competitive.
And
that's another thing.
Yeah.
The depth of the field.
Oh, right. We'll get to that in a second. But allowing them to, you need to allow them to develop mid-season, but then they got to step up and do it. You can't do the Ducati thing. You just can't. You know?
Well, at some point, if you do it for too long, Suzuki's totally safe from that.
Right.
It's their first year.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
doing fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the Ducati thing,
it's just that whole,
I don't understand why they are running the old bike that they knew was pathetic.
They
should have focused everything on...
If you ask Stoner, if you ask Hayden, I asked Nikki a few years back when I was covering MotoGP at Laguna, it's like, so the bike's not working great, what did you guys bring new? He's like, nothing.
Yeah, they're not.
We had nothing new.
Ducati might have bet everything on... We came up with the right thing in the off season, and then the early results appeared to say it's good, and then you don't, you know.
Ugh.
Well, we got the break. That's why they schedule a break,
right?
So that people can try to regroup and get back in the game and all that stuff. We'll see what, you know, it's the dilemma that Honda and Yamaha had last year. Do we make a change or do we leave it alone, right?
You're looking pretty good. It'll be awesome.
The Suzuki guys and the Ducati guys are going to be trying hard.
How are we doing on time?
We're over. It's time for the 2-minute board.
2-minute board. What, you got anything?
No.
I'm totally... It's like I got nothing.
I'm useless.
I don't know if you're useless.
Oh, by the way,
your ballast.
Where are we?
Oh, we're at Fontana.
We're at Auto Club Speedway Track Riders event.
Absolutely.
I got a garage full of... people and bikes I'm helping out and keeping an eye on, and then we decided to make podcasts in this environment. But I thought about saying, hey, we should go out to turn 6 or something and make, but I'm pretty sure that we know it'd be rah, you know,
right,
it'd just be
exactly.
a pain in the ass, right?
Really
the cool would be done in 30 seconds.
Exactly. That's, yeah, you got to be careful of that. The one, what was it, the one,
one joke pony, so to speak. And I'm sorry about my voice, you guys. I am like a pony today. I'm a little hoarse. Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Tip he's Michael Gugis.
Wait. We didn't finish our 2-minute board.
Oh, I thought it was where we are.
No. Okay, I got a brief shout out, and I know we do this all the time. Colin Fraser and Canadian Superbike. I don't know if you've been watching it this year or not. It's been a ball to watch. It's been a ball to watch a 600. It's been a ball to watch the leader bikes. There's been rain, chaos, a couple of guys battling for the lead.
Rain? Dude, it was a deluge at St. Eustache, I think is the name of the place.
Awesome.
It's a great battle.
Awesome. It's been great.
And that nobody guy was leading for a while.
For a long time.
You know how nobody he is?
Yeah.
He has like 7 billion Facebook posts. Here's a clip of me in the lead. Hey, did you hear that I was in the lead? Hey, it's awesome. You know, yesterday I was talking to the mom of a young kid who mm-hmm. was here practicing. And I told her, you know, we're talking about, you know, all these options that you have. And I said, listen, you go race in the Canadian Superbike Series.
Yeah.
They've got a series for kids. They got their Honda 250 class.
Right.
And I said, you'll have awesome TV. You will be on TV.
Yes.
They have great coverage. It's not internet coverage. It's TV. Real TV.
And the other thing, too, it's easy to find. If we don't have the TV coverage, I could find it on YouTube.
You just type in Canadian Superbike.
Exactly.
And boom,
it's there all the time.
Yep.
It's been great racing. Easy to find. I mean, I'm so tired of hearing excuses about why it can't be done. And I just want, you know, just like I said, just a shout out to Colin.
The guy's a genius.
Yep. Absolutely. He's Ed Sorbo.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.